It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Here comes the heat again. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. The Great American Bake Off continues today. We'll be touching 90 this afternoon and be well into the 90s by tomorrow afternoon. Much of New York and Pennsylvania under a heat advisory tomorrow. Real feel conditions will tickle the century mark by then. It is air that you wear, says meteorologist Kevin Williams. Also heating up, tensions with China, a day after House Speaker Pelosi ruffled China's feathers with her visit to Taiwan. The communist nations announced plans to conduct 6 days of military drills around Taiwan. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
We expected that the Chinese would have some sort of a show of force, even a muscular reaction, and they appear to be doing that.
Rebecca Heinrichs with the Hudson Institute says the Pelosi trip was a step forward for the U.S. on the world stage.
This is great for Speaker Pelosi. She has defied now both President Biden, who didn't want her to go, and Xi Jinping, who did not want to see the third in line to the presidency go to Taiwan. And really, the Biden administration could take some of her moxie and courage here.
Beijing will begin live fire drills in the South China Sea tomorrow. Those military exercises will take place in Taiwanese territorial water. They are the largest in that part of the world in about 30 years. The first vote on abortion since the Supreme Court struck down Roe was held yesterday in the state of Kansas. Kansans rejected a constitutional amendment that would have protected the rights of the unborn. That means abortion will remain legal in the Jayhawk state. Correspondent Kately Huey Byrne.
Is this the end? Can the legislature do anything?
I think it might be a while before we get another bite at the apple.
Turnout was significantly higher than expected for a primary contest in the state at 47%.
If you can see that the no votes win here, that would mean that you could have that in any part of the country, no matter how red it is.
The vote in Kansas suggests that abortion could be a key issue in the fall election. President Biden will sign an executive order today, making it easier for abortion-vulnerable women to travel across state lines to terminate their pregnancy. More questions than answers when it comes to the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which Democrats hope to get across the finish line before the midterms. Critics are wondering whether it will actually alleviate the sticker shock that many of us are feeling at the grocery store and gas pump right now. West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin is confident it will.
This is not a Democrat bill. This is not a Republican bill. Not a Green deal. This is a red, white, and blue deal. This is about what can we do for the country. And right now, inflation is the greatest threat that we have.
Critics say the Inflation Reduction Act will actually worsen inflation and cost the U.S. economy tens of thousands of jobs. Insult added to injury in eastern Kentucky, where the forecast today calls for oppressive heat and humidity. It's adding to the misery for those devastated by catastrophic flooding. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul.
We're devastated for our friends and many families who I know personally up in eastern Kentucky. Nearly 40 people have perished in the flooding.
Cooling centers are going up in areas without power as residents pick up the pieces to their shattered lives.
Estill Click has lived in his now flood-ravaged, mud-coated single-story brick home in Hindman, Kentucky, a long time.
50 years.
Still, Click has hope, despite losing most everything.
Can't give up. This is part of life. You accept it and go on.
A testament to the human spirit.
Correspondent Jim Crisula in hard-hit eastern Kentucky. Busloads of illegal immigrants are arriving daily in our nation's capital. They are coming from Texas. The transfer of border crossers not sitting well with D.C.'s mayor, who calls it a political stunt.
This just shows the hypocrisy of these liberal leaders up in the Northeast who think, well, that border crisis created by Joe Biden, that's fine as long as it's Texas that has to deal with it. But as soon as they have to deal with the real consequences of Biden's border cause crisis, they're up in arms.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott says he will continue busing illegals to Washington until the Biden administration gets serious about securing the border.
We're going to keep sending those buses up there until the Biden administration does its job to enforce the laws concerning the border.
More than 5,000 illegal immigrants have been bused to D.C. from Texas since April. Washington Mayor Mario Bowser says her city is at a tipping point due to the influx of migrants coming into this country from south of the border. Vin Scully, the voice of the L.A. Dodgers and the soundtrack to baseball, has died.
In a year that has been so improbable, the
Scully was the Dodgers announcer for 67 years, joining the team in Brooklyn back in 1950.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Ben Scully speaking to you.
Fans gathered outside Dodgers Stadium last night to pay their respects.
It's the end of an era, and there's nobody like him. So thank you, Vin.
The Hall of Famer was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom shortly after his retirement in 2016.
I have said enough for a lifetime. And for the last time, I wish you all a very pleasant good afternoon.
There will never be another like him. Vin Scully, the voice of baseball, was 94. Still to come on the Noon Report, put away your phones in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Zeldin not worried despite the polls. And charges announced today in Rochester against an accused cop killer.
Oh, good afternoon. A toasty day underway, but it stays rain-free. That'll change tomorrow. Forecast details in 10.
All right, Kevin Williams, good to have you back at the Weather Center. Let's check the stories from New York and Pennsylvania. New York Republican gubernatorial candidate Lee Zeldin isn't putting much stock in a new Siena College poll that shows him trailing Democrat incumbent Kathy Hochul by double digits. Zeldin is confident that come Election Day, his stance on what matters most to the voters will catapult him to victory.
What we're seeing is there top two issues are crime and the economy, and we know that we're on the right side of these issues.
New York has not elected a Republican governor since George Pataki in 2002. That was 20 years ago. For her part, Kathy Hochul is trying to become the first woman ever elected governor of New York.
All I know is on Election Day, I will put it all on the table. I fight hard, I get my message out, and I take it very seriously because I believe in democracy.
She took over for Andrew Cuomo last August when he resigned amid a sexual harassment scandal. The Siena poll has Hochul over Zeldin 53-39%. Governor Hochul today announced a plan to give health care workers a $3,000 bonus. It's part of a $1.3 billion effort in New York to increase recruitment at healthcare facilities. Healthcare workers in the Empire State earning less than $125,000 a year are eligible. More than a third of New York is in a drought, and area farmers are worried that's going to cause some real problems when it comes time for the fall harvest. Dan Hurley with Bradley Farms in Elmira tells WETM-TV.
If current conditions continue as they are with such an extreme lack of rainfall, we are going to see quite of what I'll call diminishing returns. That's the big concern on most farmers' minds this year. Still not too late for some turnaround, but each day that goes by without anything, it just makes it look a little bit worse.
Next chance of rain is tomorrow, but it will be hit and miss like it's been all summer long in the Northeast. The Monroe County, New York District Attorney announcing formal charges today against the 21-year-old accused in the fatal shooting of a veteran police officer. Police say Kelvin Vickers fired 17 rounds into an unmarked patrol car last month, killing Anthony Mazurkiewicz, a 29-year veteran of the Rochester Police Force. A high-speed police chase last night spanned nearly 20 miles in two counties. In western New York, cops had to lay down police spikes to apprehend four suspected shoplifters. The chase began in Lockport in Niagara County and ended in Medina in Orleans County. A police helicopter and canine unit also assisted in that chase. Tired of those annoying robocalls, aren't we all? Pennsylvania is joining a new task force at Ames to reduce them.
Yes, State Attorney General Josh Shapiro says Pennsylvania has joined an anti-robocall litigation task force. That task force, made up of 50 attorneys general, aims to investigate and take legal action against telecommunications companies responsible for bringing a majority of foreign robocalls into the United States. Mark Webster, Family Life News.
Thank you, Mark. One of Pennsylvania's largest school districts imposed a no-phone zone in the classroom. The Scranton district announcing restrictions on electronic devices on campus. There's also a new policy when it comes to backpacks. Reporter Marshall Keeley with Newswatch 16 attended a school board meeting last night.
No phones, no tablets, no electronics of any kind. That's the new policy in the Scranton School District. School officials point out the disruption those devices cause in the classroom, saying they can also help students cheat. Teachers say while phones are a family lifeline, they can also cause problems.
Another change for the district, any bags or backpacks carried by students on campus in Scranton must be clear and see-through. The new phone and backpack policies take effect when the new school year begins in about a month there in Scranton. The school bus driver shortage is so bad that New York's second largest school district is actually thinking of paying parents to drive their kids to school themselves. The Buffalo School District considering reimbursing moms and dads for the cost of taking their children to school. The alleged beef thief from Newfane, New York, faces a felony hearing tomorrow in Niagara County. 59-year-old Tracy Murphy runs an animal sanctuary in Newfane and is accused of stealing two cows from a local farmer in an effort to save them from the slaughterhouse. New York trooper James O'Callaghan says Murphy was arrested yesterday following a two-week cattle battle.
Troopers were only going there to facilitate a property retrieval, and at that time, that's when things went a little sideways. The owner of the sanctuary would not release the cows.
A couple weeks ago, the cows wandered onto Murphy's property, and that's how this beef got started. Local farmer Scott Gregson says he is indebted to the community of Newfane for its support.
I never thought anything like this would ever happen if someone's animals got loose. It happens quite a bit in the country, and we always work together. You can't mess with farmers. We're going to stick together, and we're going to do what's right.
The animal rights activist charged with third-degree grand larceny. Again, she'll be in court tomorrow. Tolls on the Pennsylvania Turnpike are going up for the 15th straight year. The Turnpike Commission says the 5% hike takes effect in January. The Pennsylvania Turnpike reportedly the most expensive highway system in the world. New York Congresswoman Claudia Tenney thinks a new Cold War is brewing with Communist China, and the Biden administration needs strategic clarity when it comes to dealing with Beijing.
Joe Biden is the most compromised president on China in American history. He puts out mixed signals. You know, Joe Biden says one thing about supporting Taiwan, and then his staff walks it back. It's time for strategic clarity. But this is a tough issue when we have a feckless, weak president like President Biden who is not standing up to America's enemies like China.
Tenney says China is 10 times the superpower it was when the U.S. first recognized Taiwan back in 1979. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has upheld the state's controversial mail-in voting law. That 5-2 decision yesterday means no excuse. Mail-in balloting will be allowed in marquee matchups for both governor and U.S. Senate this fall. More than half the states, by the way, permit no-excuse absentee voting. Pennsylvania joined them back in 2019. Teenagers are now being asked to play a role in reducing the amount of trash thrown out of car windows alongside Pennsylvania's highways. Family Life's Greg Gillespie has that story new at noon.
Teens who take part in the Every Litter Bit Matters program will not only do one cleanup, they'll also be asked to, through the year, develop creative community awareness projects aimed at young people and the general public. DOT Secretary Yasmin Gramian told a news conference that $3.5 million that could go for bridge and road repairs instead goes to pick up garbage.
This will not only save costs and staff time at PennDOT, but also make our state an even more beautiful place to live.
Students who want to join can sign up through the Young Ambassadors Group. Links are on the PA DOT website and Twitter account. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
Thank you very much, Greg. 14 past the hour, midday sports next on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, as expected, the wheeling and dealing went down yesterday on the final day before Major League Baseball's trade deadline, and the biggest name of them all moved out west in an 8-player trade. Juan Soto is now a San Diego Padre, and his former teammate, first baseman Josh Bell, is still his teammate. He also went to the Padres. The Mets acquired infielder Darren Ruff for J.D. Davis and three other players from the Giants. The Yankees traded Jordan Montgomery to the St. Louis Cardinals for center fielder Harrison Bader. The Yanks also traded away Joey Gallo to the Dodgers for a minor league pitcher. The Phillies picked up Noah Syndergaard and Brandon Marsh from the Angels for a couple of minor leaguers, and they also traded for reliever David Robertson with the Chicago Cubs. Eric Hosmer will now be playing for the Boston Red Sox, but the Padres will still be paying his salary through the 2025 season. All right, action on the diamond saw O'Neill Cruz go deep, and the Pittsburgh Pirates surprised Corbin Burns and the Milwaukee Brewers 5-3. The Phillies got hammered by the Braves 13-1, and the Mets' 7-game winning streak is over, falling to the Nationals 5-1. Jacob DeGrom, not bad. He went 5 innings, only gave up 1 run, did not figure into the decision. Other winners in the National League, San Diego taking 2 against Colorado, Cincinnati, St. Louis, and the Dodgers. Arizona won the interleague game against Cleveland. In the American League, the Mariners outslugged the Yankees 8-6. Toronto, Detroit, Baltimore, Boston, the White Sox, and the Angels, your other winners. And one sad note, Vin Scully has passed away at the age of 94. That is a look at sports.
All right, Randy, we'll have more on Scully's passing, the voice of baseball coming up. Also ahead, abortion remains legal in Kansas, and China flexing its military muscle in the South China Sea.
How ironic that Darwinian evolution is proving to not be the fittest and worthy of survival. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In 1973, evolutionary biologist Theodosius Dobzhansky wrote that, quote, "Nothing in biology makes sense except in light of evolution." Today, almost 50 years later, an increasing number of scientists are asking whether or not evolution makes any sense in light of what we now know from biology. A recent long-form essay in The Guardian signals just how urgent the problem has become for the most dominant theory in the history of the sciences. In it, author Stephen Burani gives voice to a growing number of scientists who think that it's time for, quote, a new theory of evolution. For a long time, descent with slight modifications in natural selection has been the basic, and I'd add unchallengeable, story of evolution. Organisms change, and those that survive pass on their traits. Though massaged a bit to incorporate the discovery of DNA, the theory of evolution by natural selection has dominated for 150 years, especially in biology. The problem, writes Burani, is that according to a growing number of scientists, this basic story is absurdly crude and misleading. For one thing, Darwinian evolution assumes much of what it needs to explain. For instance, consider the origin of light-sensitive cells that rearranged to become the first eye, or the blood vessels that became the first placenta. How did these things originate? According to one biologist from the University of Indiana, quote, "We still do not have a good answer. The classic idea of gradual change, one happy accident at a time, has so far fallen flat." The scientific doubt about Darwin has been simmering for a while now. And back in 2014, an article in the journal Nature, jointly authored by 8 scientists from diverse fields, argued that evolutionary theory was in need of a serious rethink. They called their proposed rethink the extended evolutionary synthesis. A year later, the Royal Society in London held a conference to discuss it. Along with Darwinian blind spots like the origin of the eye, the extended synthesis seeks to deal with the discovery of epigenetics, an emerging field that studies the inherited traits not mediated by DNA. Then there are those rapid mutations that evade natural selection, a fossil record that appears to move in short, concentrated bursts or explosions, something called plasticity. That's the ability we now know that living things have to adapt physically to their environments in a single generation without genetically evolving.
The Guardian article went on to describe how Royal Society scientists and Nobel laureates alike boycotted that conference, attacking the extended synthesis as, quote, irritating and disgraceful. They called its proponents, quote, revolutionaries. Now, of course, such resistance is not surprising at all to anyone who's been paying attention to this whole thing. Any challenges to the established theory of life's origins, whether from Bible-believing scientists or intelligent design theorists, have long been dismissed as nothing more than religion in a lab coat. However, this habit of fixing upon a dogma and then calling it settled science is just bad science that stunts our understanding of the world. And it is a kind of idolatry that places science in the seat of God, appoints certain scientists as priests capable of giving answers that no fallible human can offer, and feigns certainty where real questions remain. Now, as challenges to Darwin continue to mount, and they will, we should be able to articulate why settled science is such a poor God. And we should encourage the science and the scientists challenging this old theory-turned-dogma and hold it to its own standards. Because, after all, if Darwinian evolution is as unfit as it now seems to be, it shouldn't survive. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 past the hour, Kevin Williams next.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast. Our call for this afternoon, ample sunshine, hot, high temps, mid-80s to the low 90s, cooling near Lake Erie in Ontario. Much warmer tonight than last night and turning muggier too. Could be a late night shower, thunderstorm near Lake Erie. Low temps near 70. Tomorrow, variable clouds, sun, couple showers and thunderstorms around, especially in the afternoon. Be hot, humid, high temps near 90 for many. And then cloudy, clammy, some showers and rumbles Friday with high temperatures in the 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Good to have you back at the Weather Center. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. A lot happening this Wednesday afternoon. The 3rd of August will begin at the White House. President Biden expected to sign an executive order this afternoon ensuring abortion access. It would guarantee a right to an abortion across state lines. Pro-lifers call it more evidence of misplaced priorities on the part of the White House. Kansas voters have rejected a constitutional amendment that would have protected the life of the unborn. The failed statewide referendum was the nation's first vote on abortion since the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade in late June. Pollster Anthony Salvanto.
An abortion amendment was voted down. The voters of Kansas voted no. At this point, it's a 59-41 win for no. That will keep the right to abortion in the state constitution.
In other election results from yesterday, one of the 10 House Republicans to vote to impeach Donald Trump lost his GOP congressional primary in Michigan. In Arizona, no clear winner yet in the Republican primary for governor. One of the candidates is endorsed by Trump, the other by Trump's vice president, Mike Pence. China's flexing its military muscle after House Speaker Pelosi's high-stakes trip to Taiwan. The communist regime is planning live military exercises in the South China Sea tomorrow. In response to that visit, which lasted less than 24 hours, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
There was no threat to China itself. They created this crisis. We should not let them use the visit of Speaker Pelosi to create this big uproar where America says, oh my goodness, we're going to have World War III.
These military drills expected to last 6 days. They are the largest on the part of China in response to Taiwan in some 30 years. Hot, muggy weather's replaced flash flooding in eastern Kentucky, and that is adding to the misery for those trying to rebuild from catastrophic flooding. Gary Barr with the National Guard says in many places, basic infrastructure is gone.
There's going to be houses that have been separated from their foundations and relocated in streets or just completely washed away in creeks.
The death toll from the flooding remains at 37. A victory for veterans. The U.S. Senate giving final approval to a measure that enhances health care benefits for millions of our war heroes. This is for vets exposed to toxic burn pits while serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Comedian activist John Stewart led the charge on behalf of the vets.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little.
The bill nearly went off the rails last week. Legendary baseball broadcaster Vin Scully has died.
It's time for Dodger Baseball.
Former broadcasting partner Dick Enberg said this about Scully back in 2009.
No one ever has called a baseball game better, nor for longer, than Vin Scully. He was our poet laureate. 6 decades without divorce, what a marriage with the Dodgers. It speaks for itself.
Correspondent Jason Cappadonia has more from L.A.
Scully was born in the Bronx in 1927 and discovered his love of baseball at the age of 8 while watching the second game of the 1936 World Series at a laundromat.
I fell in love with the roar of the crowd coming out of a speaker on an old four-legged radio.
He became the principal announcer for the Brooklyn Dodgers and moved with the team to Los Angeles in 1958, where he made notable calls, such as the perfect game in 1965 by pitcher Sandy Koufax.
Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung out and missed the perfect game.
And slugger Kirk Gibson's home run in the 1988 World Series.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Scully spent 67 seasons as the Dodgers play-by-play announcer, retiring after the 2016 season.
And while announcing his retirement, Scully compared himself to an aging ball player.
What's that old joke about I'm still throwing as hard as ever, it's just taking longer to get there?
Vin Scully was 94. It's 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And Chris, college students getting ready to head back. And today we talk to parents about how they can make some last-minute efforts to help their children navigate the increasingly hostile campus environments for Christians.
The subject is a difficult one to talk about, but definitely one we need to talk about. And, you know, the college environment isn't what it was, let's say, even 20 years ago. And all this talk about equity and inclusion, I'll be honest with you, it doesn't really include everyone. If you're a Christian or if you hold the biblical values, it's not often including you, unfortunately, on a lot of our campuses. But, you know, our children, specifically our college-age students that we're talking about now, really are on the front lines.
And unfortunately, the numbers of students turning from their faith during the college years is very alarming.
It is, Brandon. That number keeps going up. Both a USA Today poll and a Barna Group poll found as much as 75% of college students will actually fall away from their faith upon leaving high school and once they enter college. They attribute this to something called intellectual skepticism. Now, I think that if we're being honest here, we could all admit to some level of skepticism at some point in our walk with Christ. Jesus knew this too. He encouraged the most famous skeptic, that being the Apostle Thomas, who had to literally feel the holes in Christ's wrists to know that he was truly risen from the grave, and in fact, he did. So now let's fast forward a couple of thousand years here, and we'll see that today on college campuses, by and large, we're being run by secularists who really pride themselves in their intellectual capacities and quite honestly are what this whole intellectual skepticism is all about. So it's not surprising that not only are students of faith being labeled as some sort of second rate or second class student, but they're increasingly and openly targeted for their beliefs.
So what can students and parents do to help combat this indirect and increasingly not so indirect attack on students of faith?
One thing that parents who have students heading off to college, particularly to secular institutions, is to sit them down and have a very direct, very clear conversation with them about these challenges. Check in with your child routinely, too, once they leave for school, and ask them about what they're hearing, about what they're learning, and be ready to help answer questions they will undoubtedly have about the challenges to their faith. Just because they're out of the nest and in college doesn't mean that you have to step back too much from being involved in their lives. And also keep an eye on your child's willingness to engage you in conversation, how willing they are to just share openly with you, and especially with what they're learning. And if you see some big changes here, that may indicate that there's some sort of dynamic happening where they may be turning away. Don't hesitate to also ask them point blank, are you having difficulty with how we raised you and with what you're learning now? And if so, open up the conversation. Some parents may not have this level of openness with their child, and if you, as a parent, need some sort of help with this, definitely seek support from a pastor, a counselor, but also, as parents, monitor what they're learning in their classes and take action to refute the misinformation or the blatant lies. Make sure your child isn't being unfairly graded on their assignment or targeted because of their beliefs. If you believe your child is being unfairly targeted, do not hesitate to contact the school. Ask to meet with school officials. There are legal firms nationally here in the United States that want to hear from you. They are in existence today solely to provide legal support to people being targeted for their faith. Another tip also is to encourage your child to connect with faith-based organizations on campus as quickly as possible so they can connect with friends who share their beliefs. Now, be aware, many campus organizations have also been tainted, if you will, by this shift to the left and not offering the support that you might be looking for. But it's a possible area to find friends who will most likely share the same level of beliefs as you do. You can also check out the campus student organizations prior to arrival who may be able to give you some answers and provide staff and connections with other students that will reach out to your child as well.
What are some of those legal firms that offer support to people of faith?
Brandon, I've personally contacted one out of Texas called First Liberty and spoken with an attorney there to discuss this changing and increasingly hostile nature in our world towards people of faith, but also as it relates to my own profession. They want to hear from folks that have these challenges to their faith. And another firm is the Alliance Defending Freedom. I have not personally spoken with anybody there, but either of those firms can be located online. And there will be information about how you can contact them on the respective websites.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the noon report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. You can download all our Real Answers podcasts at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. High pressure producing the hot, dry, fair day today will give way to a cold front. It will be preceded by a surge of tropical humidity tonight and tomorrow. That, in turn, will pop some showers and storms. Our call for this afternoon, though, dry. Ample sunshine, hot, high temps, mid-80s to the low 90s, cooling near Lake Erie in Ontario. Much warmer tonight than last night and turning muggier, too. Could be a late-night shower or thunderstorm near Lake Erie. Low temps near 70. Tomorrow, variable clouds, sun, couple showers and thunderstorms around, especially in the afternoon. Be hot, humid, high temps near 90 for many. And then cloudy, clammy, some showers and rumbles Friday with high temperatures in the 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. And finally from us at noon today, a corn maize in the upper Midwest has risen to the top of the crop. Family Life's Brian Query explains.
Corn mazes are built all over the United States in the summer and autumn months, but one Minnesota farm believes it now has the biggest one ever. Stony Brook Farms in Foley, Minnesota unveiled its new Halloween-themed maze, which features the likeness of classic horror film villains. And get a load of these stats. The maze is 110 acres in size, with four different maze options and over 32 miles of pathways. The owner says this year's maze was built on a particularly large field due to crop rotation. Some elements have been added to help maze goers, one being a QR code that puzzlers can scan with their phone and follow their location while walking through the maze. Owners are awaiting word back on if their colossal crop creation is certified as an amazing new record. Brian Query, Family Life News.
All right, Brian, thank you for that. And that's our world Wednesday, the 3rd of August. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.